There have been people who have had death experiences and who've shared those with us. And without question, all of them have shown that it's a peaceful, beautiful state of consciousness. Now remember, when we're born knowing how to breathe. We're born knowing how each of our glands and organs and our blood cells will function. Who taught it how to do that? The only thing missing when we're dying or dead is our energy. In fact, as we become sick, our energy wanes because our chi is used as a resource to keep us vital. So vitalism is the key of life. So all of our consciousness and all of the memory of everything that has preceded us that we are now and will go forward with is in the energy. Hence the exchange of energy, understanding that energy is where I've spent my life's work. I don't have the time now to discuss all the different ways I've been able to, in effect, prove that out. But we have. But at the end, we will only know each of us when our time comes. To the more important question, however, is what is the meaning of life? I believe the meaning of life is service to others. I believe that there is no higher reward that we could accept or expect than to know that because we were alive, others' lives were touched in a positive way, helped. And for those who are in the greatest need, we should not forget that we have gifts that we can give them, the gift of insight, the gift of help, the gift of cooperation, collaboration. And so that is the, at least from my own particular and subjective perspective, I believe that we are given gifts in life, we're given insights, we're given intuition, we're given courage, we're given character. And if we've had good parents, as many of us have, then at least in balance, we're given the idea that not just to live a selfish, self-absorbed, narcissistic life. Live as if other people counted, and live as if you're not just here to consume as many things as possible for yourself, but rather to see that others also have some quality to their life, and that is service. So service has to be the underlying theme, in my opinion, of life. And if you look at all the great minds throughout history, from Gandhi to Martin Luther King, all flawed, we're all flawed in different ways, but what they are not flawed in is the sense of character that allows them to share the best that they are, and that certainly rebalances on the scale of remembering them and the legacy they have left. We don't remember the person that just makes a lot of money and spends it on himself. We certainly don't remember the person that can't walk away from a mirror without being depressed that they're not looking at themselves anymore. We don't remember the people that are always grouchy and negative and pessimistic and looking for flaws and faults in other people so they can condemn them and blame them. You know, try going to a BAI or Pacifica meeting if you want that. We don't remember the people who couldn't stop talking about themselves. We remember the people who come into our lives and touch us gently and care about us and love us for who we are. That's who we remember. Those are people who've lived a life of commitment, and that's why we love them. Hope that answers your question.
Sure does. Thank you.
Okay. I want to thank you all for listening from all over the world. And I'll look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day, everyone. Now let's say hello to Yatrice Lead, standing by in her studio, somewhere in a place in the United States, guarded by... Hello, Yatrice.
Hello, Gary. Today, it's Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories. Listeners basically take the program wherever they wish it to go.
Good. Well, Donald Trump won't be calling in because he doesn't have a mind to free. You three sleep right now.
That's the incomparable Tito Puente, and of course we just heard Mario Rivera on saxophone, bringing us into our program today. Tito Puente, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful entertainer and musician, composer, arranger, and of course most well known for his virtuosity on timbales. That's an incredible gift that he had. And, of course, famous also as the great son of both Puerto Rico and Spanish Harlem. His Latin ensemble with Take Five, composed by Paul Desmond and made a jazz standard by Dave Brubeck. Of course, Tito Puente makes it a mambo, and this is part of his collection on his 1990 album Mambo Diablo. Tito Puente was just so familiar with all kinds of music. He was all over the place, jazz, Latin, pop music, everything, and was just so well-loved. He died on June the 1st, 2000, or as people would say 2000, at the age of 77. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Friday, July the 25th. And right here on Lead Stories, you know that that means it's Free Your Mind Friday. The program belongs to you. It's an open forum where your ideas and opinions and analyses of the issues of the day or whatever else you wish to offer. That's the main feature of our program today. So I am strictly the traffic cop and timekeeper, and I'm urging us to just keep it as tight as possible so we could accommodate as many callers as possible. We usually have an abundance of calls, and sometimes not everybody could get in. 888-874-4888 is the number to call, and let's move it along today with your great ideas and your opinions and just what you're thinking about what has been going on for the week or anything else that you think might be worthy of consideration. We start off with Harvey from California.
Hello, wonderful Eutrice, and
hello, great Harvey.
And happiness to you and your great and your wonderful audience.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Quantanglement.
That's right. We're just speaking the language of connection, of inclusion. It's the way to go. But today I have a new energy idea that I feel it can be repeated throughout America and the world, and it's to do with something here in California. You know, we have the Central Growing Valley, which supplies about 25% of the food that goes across American tables. But it has an aqueduct system that needs repair. They haven't invested any money over a long period of time. And because of saltwater intrusion and earthquake danger, so we have to repair the aqueduct system. And I say, and it's a system of over 1,000 miles of canals. And many, and it's just so the thing is to repair and rebuild the aqueduct system. And while doing that, they can cover appropriate portions with a photovoltaic canopy, a solar electric canopy that could, or an awning to shade it. And this would help to cool the water, to keep the water cleaner and slow what they call evapotranspiration. That is, while the water is moving over these hundreds of miles, it evaporates, large amounts evaporate. And so, especially during the drought here in California, we need as much water as we can get. And so this project, covering California's aqueduct system with solar electric canopies, would certainly help to save California's water. Now, here's the beautiful part. At the same time, and Central Valley is rich in sunshine, so at the same time, Governor Jerry Brown wants to build a high-speed rail system through the Central Valley. And so I say that the electricity, the clean, renewable electricity generated by the California aqueduct system could power the California's high-speed rail with clean, renewable energy because, number one, hydroelectric dams in California are sort of drying up. They're not, you can't count on them anymore. And we certainly want to close the nuclear power plant here, the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant that could produce a Fukushima-like nuclear disaster. So we're looking for a new source of electricity. And at the same time, this would create a lot of jobs in California. Central Valley really needs a lot of money investment, and this would do it. And also, it could be paid for by the cap-and-trade fees that are generated in California. So this is a new idea that, again, can be repeated around the world, covering the canali system with an awning or a canopy, a photovoltaic canopy that'll generate clean, renewable electricity, and it doesn't use any water, and that electricity could be used for high-speed rail throughout the country.
It's an excellent, excellent idea. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay. From New York City, Mitch, you're on the air.
Hello, Lutrish.
Hi.
I remember you back from the Slave Theater.
Oh, yeah. And,
I want to thank you for your contributions and
thank
for
you so
staying
much.
The line.
Thank you.
I would like to know if you could do a program on your music. I really like the music that you play and how you go into detail about, you know, who the musicians are and how they and where they were when they made it. I love your music, you know. Every time you put on a song, it's a different thing. You know, it's great.
Thank you. I really enjoy music myself, and I get a lot of reaction from people who are music lovers, so thank you for that.
And also, I would like to know, I've heard the expression that we should do dialogue on race, and do you think that would make a difference with the hardcore racist people and the idea of this mystique of white supremacy with the hardcore people that really, really make a difference in this type of society that we live in?
Well, you know, I don't believe that I believe that the greater threat is not the hardcore, as you call it, the hardcore racists. The greater threat is from the softcore racists. People who do not see themselves as racist, people who don't believe that it matters really, it's gone, it's done, get over it, and let's move on, those kinds of people who are in that mode. That is really the more pervasive form of racism that we experience today, people who simply just don't acknowledge it. To the degree that I don't know whether the dialogue would help, because there has to be a psychological acceptance of things, and people are really not. I mean, there's so much incentive to not deal with it if you happen to be white in America. You really have to work hard, and this is what I'm saying, that this is, in effect, the struggle for whites in America. They have a struggle. The focus has always been that the struggle belongs to those who are victimized by it. No, the struggle is by those who are benefiting and continue to benefit from racism and inequality in America. The struggle in terms of where we are, as a group, let's put it in this sense, that we're talking now to a progressive community. It's time for them to show their progressive credentials, and that comes in the form of documented evidence that you are in the struggle of dismantling and destroying racism. And I referred to this earlier in the week when I talked about Elizabeth Warren in the heart of Detroit speaking to a mostly white audience of so-called national organizers. And basically, they all were in a whole other world, even as they were articulating their commitment to struggles and the platforms that she outlined and the issues that she outlined as worthy of engagement with were fine. You can't argue with it. But it's just that, again, we have these blinders that are put on that the world, I mean, they are in a kind of bubble. They don't understand that there is an obligation. This is not voluntary, in my view, anymore, and we have to up the ante on it. We have to make it a demand. If you are supposedly progressive and involved in creating a better world, you have to express and articulate your commitment to the dismantling of inequality in America, period. That's where I am. So I think we have to take the gloves off here. The hardcore racists have always been hardcore, but they're not nearly, even in numerical terms, they're not nearly as great a threat as the softcore ones.
But these are people, the hardcore people, like the Koch brothers, like the Bushes, some of our own people. These are the people that are really making a difference in how people perceive racism.
I could see your point there, but I would counter it with this. It is not to be seen as in a personalized sense like that. If we are to understand this as a structural problem, you know, the Koch brothers and so forth, they're very visible, they have money and so forth, and we tend to create emblems of a problem, and we get a certain sense of satisfaction, and there's a certain kind of psychological safety in saying, well, we've identified one of the sources or one of the carriers of the virus. The fact is that the virus, like most viruses, they become more lethal when they are not, when they become so pervasive. That's the whole thing. This is a pervasive problem in America today. And some really good people, very decent people, are very much the carriers of the virus. So we have to now demand an accounting. Where do you stand on this issue? There's no point of assuming that simply because somebody presents him or herself as progressive, you say, well, okay, my guard is down. No, we have to now start calling in the accounts and figure out where it is that you stand. Where do unions stand in terms of this? Because this is about the movement of society as a whole. Where do you stand on this problem, since it is structurally linked to a whole range of other problems that we've been experiencing as a country? Thanks so much.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Sarah from Dallas, you're on the air.
Hey, Trace.
Hello, how are you today, Sarah?
You, Trace, I am doing as great as I can be expected. Let me start off by wishing you an enjoyable day. My greetings to the PRN listening audience.
You're cracking up, pardon that pun, but you are. Are you someplace safe where we can get a... let's try this. Let's see if you're okay. Go ahead. Did we lose Sarah? Uh-oh. All right. We'll try to reconnect. She did, in fact, fall out. Okay. DX from LA, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrecht. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for asking. Too bad we lost Sarah there. I'm always...
Well, she'll be back. I'm sure we'll reconnect with her.
She always gets me a little worked up, though, so maybe... <it's> a- But I'd like to say hello to all the listeners today and hope they're enjoying the show. So far, it's been really nice. I wanted to make one short comment before I talk about what I really called about. And the short comment is going to be about our shoddy media in this country and their shoddy coverage of the carnage that's going on in Gaza Strip right now. And you can take the word shoddy and replace the ODD with the ITT, if you like, and it would still apply. Basically, it's the same narrative that it always is, that Israel is defending itself, and this is a war between two equal parties, which we know is allied for us. This is a slaughter. So far, there's been over 800 Gaza residents killed. From most estimates, about 80% of them are women and children or just innocents. And then so far there's been about 20 or so soldiers, all military soldiers on the Israeli side killed. So it's very lopsided and it's a slaughter. But that's the state of our shoddy media in this country. Just wanted to put that out there and get that off my mind. Now, what I called about to talk about is the police killing of Eric Garner, Staten Island resident, which I know you know the case very well. But I wanted to talk about it from a different angle, and that angle is I talk all the time about this right-left alliance, and I wanted to be placed sort of a liaison today. Because I wanted to let people know just how the libertarian side of this looks. And they are talking about it, and they are concerned about it, at least. So I wanted to relay just how they, most of them, are looking at this. So in order to do that, I need to recount the story for people who may not know exactly what happened. Eric Garner... I guess he was hanging out, pretty much doing nothing. He had a prior arrest record, I guess about 20 arrests, mostly for selling what they call loosies, which are loose cigarettes. Now, this is a minor infraction. It's illegal in New York, I guess, because, well, they want to make the tax money off of selling cigarettes, basically. I'm trying to keep this concise. So anyway, a fight breaks out. And Eric Garner goes to try and break this fight up. The two participants or whoever in the fight are dissipated pretty much. The fight's over pretty much when the cops show up. And they basically key in on Eric Garner. And they've done this before. I guess he's been harassed before. So they key in on him, go in. They try to detain him, and they tell him, hey, we want to talk to you, stay here. Eric Garner says something to the effect of, you guys harass me all the time, and it's not happening today. Today it stops. One officer at the time, I can't think of his name, Garner starts to walk away, and the officer grabs him from behind in a chokehold. Okay. These are the first two points that the libertarians are keying in on, is that, number one, this is not a Terry stop. This is not a reasonable cause stop, so they're violating his rights because they had no reason. They didn't suspect him of being involved in the fight. They didn't suspect him on that day of selling cigarettes or anything like that. So it's an illegal stop is how they look at it. That's the first point. Number two, the chokehold has been illegal in New York since 1983. It's illegal to grab someone about their airway to detain them and apply force, and it's officially not sanctioned by the police department. That's number two. That's the second point they key in on. What happens after this is a struggle ensues, of course, and a gang of officers end up killing this man, basically. By the way, there's a third point there that the libertarians are keying in on, and it's called right to self-ownership. By trying to walk away and saying he's not going to participate in this conversation, Eric Garner is basically asserting his right to self-ownership. Okay? Okay, so we have those three issues, basically all based in constitutional theory, I believe, and law. So this is how they're looking at it. Pretty clinical, you know. So then what happens is they end up choking him to death, and they don't let medical personnel try to revive him or help him. So that's another issue. To them, that's second-degree murder because you're inhibiting someone trying to save someone's life. You're basically killing him, in effect. So,
but what are you saying? You're telling us what the libertarians are saying. What is your perspective?
Well, that's what I'm getting to right now. We, as progressives, and us being people of color who are progressives, we would see it a little differently, of course. We would see a few other issues there, of course. We know that the main issue here to us is that he's black, and this is the main reason why. Okay, so I'm just trying to point out the differences in the way we analyze things and the way they analyze things. Of course, I believe that this was harassment, and it's based on his color. Of course, he's a black male. By the way, he's a black male, 43 years old. I guess he was a hefty guy, a big guy, and had a few problems like sleep apnea and things like that. So I didn't think I needed to explain the progressive point of view. I'm just trying to put the differences between the libertarians and the progressives because I'm always talking about us working together. And it kind of shocked me that I heard people like Will Grigg and people like that talking about this. It didn't shock me, but it kind of surprised me a little bit that they are actually talking about this. So what I'm saying is, I'm putting it out there so that we can kind of see in this example where we might be able to work with them. Now, what do you think the interchange on working together would take place at?
Well, this, you know, there are many aspects of this case that to me are tragic only because this is a pattern that has been well established. So well established, in fact, that it is literally par for the course in many areas of black life and Latino life. This is shocking, but check this out. It's shocking because even though, I mean, the evidence was actually recorded and presented to the nation, mm-hmm. people are still dickering over the technical problems here. you know, even in the face of actual real-time recorded evidence of what occurred and the phases that this altercation went through, who started it, how it happened, and the treatment right before our eyes when, of course, he went into unconsciousness, and you look at the response of the so-called medical team that came with the ambulance, and they just loaded him onto a gurney and like a piece of meat, and without bringing to him any kind of emergency help, as a person obviously in serious distress, there was no the casual nature and so forth. This speaks to, again, the entrenched culture in Staten Island, which mirrors the entrenched culture in many communities that are predominantly people of color. And we have the law enforcement element being predominantly white, and in this case, Italian. So we have this dynamic going. It is interesting that we know about Mr. Garner's criminal record, but we don't know about the police officer's infractions, his record of infractions, and there is a record of infractions. But we've been through this many, many times. And this is what the thing that is fascinating to me is that people do not understand how what a miracle it is that this nation has not yet exploded over these routine ways in which citizens are dispatched from this earth by people who are given the protection of a badge and a gun. It is amazing that we have not had a series of huge explosions, because when you look at it and you look at the prison population in excess of 2 million, we have the highest number of incarcerated persons on the planet.
Yeah, 2 million.
And it is as a result of these altercations, when law enforcement comes into contact with oppressed communities, people of oppressed communities, what happens to them? Is it accidental that we find that the prison population is so disproportionately people of color? You know, you have to ask yourself, for example, how is it that during the most trenchantly racist times in this country, the population of blacks in prison was almost negligible, and then today it is almost, you know, the dominant population in the prisons.
Yes, and Eutrice, I think you keyed in on exactly what I was talking about. If there is going to be a left-right alliance in this country, I mean, obviously we have a tremendous divide in how we look at things, and this, and you're right. I mean, you're absolutely right that this is systematic. I mean, you could take it all the way, you know, if you want, back even farther back than Emmett Till, all the way up through, you know, Amadou Diallo, up to, you know, Sean Bell, you know, Romali Graham. You know, I mean, Oscar Grant. I mean, so
there
we know
are hundreds of people in the city of New York who have been killed by police, and in rather contentious circumstances. I've covered many, many, many cases, and
right.
New York is typical of many urban areas. Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., L.A., you take your pick. It's the same
Absolutely.
Story that we hear.
And the thing that I see, too, you know, we have this recent case in California of this lady, Miss Marlene Pinnock, who was walking on the up to the freeway. On the freeway
mm-hmm.
ramp. And this officer punches her and punches her and punches her. I mean, brutally beats her just for this little thing. And, you know, the thing is, this is... you're right. I mean, people need to look at these things as more than just individual incidents. I mean, this woman was absolutely, she probably had some kind of mental problem or something like that. But, you know, I called in on a radio show too, on I believe it was WBAI, and they were talking about how they were going to go to court and this and that, and there was some case in New York. They were going to go to court and get a ruling that says you have the right to videotape the police and all this stuff. And I said, we already have that right, but it doesn't make any difference on the ground. And, you know, and it was a white lawyer, obviously. And, you know, I'm not prejudiced or anything, but they never brought up the fact how many times that this happened. And it happens every single day in black and brown communities where you're subject to get a beat down for doing absolutely nothing and or get killed. I mean, a beat down, you're lucky. And even if you get beat down, you're going to get arrested. You're going to get they're going to cover up the facts, and they're going to arrest you and charge you with assault. I mean, this happens all the time. And I don't think people who are not black and brown in this country really understand. That's my point. You know, I don't think they really understand. It's not that they're blind. I think they don't really understand how systematic this is and how often this happens.
At some point, though, people are going to say that it doesn't matter whether you understand it or not. At some point, based on the decades of unregulated behavior and the oppressive relationship between the law enforcement community and the communities of color as a whole, the inequitable way in which we see the application of the so-called law, at some point, all these issues are going to be completely irrelevant. What is going to matter is that people are going to fully embrace this idea that they are being oppressed, and they will take appropriate action. And when we get into these technicalities, oh, this happened, now let's dissect the technicalities of what happened here. Did this officer do this within departmental guidelines? After a while, none of these things will be relevant in the discussion. The only thing that would be relevant in this discussion is that the line of demarcation will be drawn and people are going to take their own actions. That's what's going to happen.
But I believe you, Therese, though, that we can have the clinical aspect of it alongside of our aspect of it, which is, and just combine it together, and maybe we can start to understand each other and try to work together, because outrage.
But, you know, this, I would disagree.
So outraged.
I disagree with that, because, you know, this is, we are unnecessarily polite. This is not a polite process.
Yeah, yeah.
We are being very mannerly and very orderly and very, you know, very restrained about things that are clearly pointing up a pattern of oppression and deliberate targeting of people, and with the full knowledge that there will be no consequence to their actions, no matter how egregious. This is what is going to happen, whether people like it or not. I'm not calling for it, but I'm saying this is going to be a natural progression where people will reach the point, communities will reach the point where they will decide for themselves. And this is not going to be with the permission of others. They will decide for themselves what's an appropriate response.
But you know, you do agree with me, though, you treat that, and you said it before, that in order for us to have any kind of movement, white people have to join us. I mean, we can't do it with just.
But we don't have. I'm saying it. The time has come. If you have to prove if a condition of working together is that you have to qualify a situation, a scenario, and prove to the other side, if you will, the merit of the case, then I think we're on the wrong track. The time has come for people to say, this should have been, the question should be, on Staten Island itself, where is the white community on Staten Island with this?
Where are they?
A question. Where are you and what do you stand for? Is it a case of, well, you know, that's happening to them and it is just a reflection of the us and them dynamic that exists there? Why would people who are oppressed have to prove their humanity first?
I'm not referring to just white people. I'm referring to the mostly white people who are libertarians. I don't think you have to prove, especially in this case, to them. They already see the problems with it from their point of view. I'm saying, why don't we just combine the way we see this with the way they see this?
No. You can't put conditions on it. You either are committed or you're not. It's as simple as that. It's not about a case-by-case basis. You either are committed to ending police brutality or you're not. It's not about whether, you know, constitutional rights, and I agree if such and such conditions exist. No, you either are committed or you're not.
I don't think they're saying that, though. But I think what it is that they realize, what they see it is from a different point of view. They don't even see it as a individual incident, but they don't really, I don't think the most important aspect of it is race. I think that's what they're saying, but they don't see it as an individual incident. They see it as the government running wild and abusing, taking people's rights away anyway. But what we have to do is step in and say, hey, look, that might be true. You have your Bundys and you have your whoever's who are white, but this happens every day in the black and brown community. So this is what you guys need to understand.
I really don't think that right now, I think it's long past time to engage in fundamental education about humanity and what it is people ought to be feeling and thinking. At some point you have to decide where to direct your energy. And the energy is not about educating people into an understanding of what it is they ought to articulate as a commitment to human rights. You just know what human rights abuses look like, and you move on the basis of that. I don't know I'm tired of it. I'm sick and tired of having to educate people about me as to how they ought to feel about me. No, I don't care. I'm educated about me.
I'm going to work on that one. You got a good point there. That's a good point.
We're done with that. The time is done. There's no more education about why should anybody have to go through education about the fundamentals of what it is you ought to feel when you are looking at a video of a man being killed? Why do you need any further education?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You either are committed or you're not.
Yeah, but I still think we can work together, and I'm going to continue to try.
Yes, we can, but on this end. This requires the work that the white community has to do, frankly. This business of, well, let me see what the circumstances are and on what conditions I could become involved. No, this is not a tidy process. Struggle means you are committed or you're not. Okay, and that's the end of it. And we need to start demanding answers from communities that are absent from the fray.
I agree.
We need to, where are you? Why have you not been here? Why has it not been the case? Not one single white legislator so far has stepped up to the plate and expressed outrage at this. Not one in the entire city of New York. Come on here. If the black community doesn't interpret these things as part of the information it needs in order to articulate a way forward, then it's on them. It's time to end this business of, well, patience, we done. Education, we done about that. We are over all these things. You've had 238 years of instruction. Time to move on. We have to look at the case and take it on a case-by-case basis. No, we are not oppressed on a case-by-case basis.
Dr. King worked with a lot of white people, white liberals, too, Bill. I mean,
but you have to understand that was a whole different thing. Dr. King did not, this was not a movement to educate white people. This was a movement about securing rights for oppressed people. And white people were supposed to be, and this was not a favor, white people, if they were committed to struggle, that's what they would do. Just like right now, you talking about the people in Gaza, you have no connection to people in Gaza, but your innate sense of humanity compels you to speak up about it. It compels you to take a stand. It does. You are no respecter of boundaries. Nobody asked. You did not say, well, I could see Israel's point because blah, 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 blah. No, you understood and you framed the discussion the way it ought to be framed. This is a crime against humanity. And you're speaking up. You have no connection with Gaza. But you are compelled to respond in the appropriate way. And that's what we need to see from our so-called friends in the progressive world. This is not about, here's a bill of particulars. See whether, you find a preponderance of reasons to become involved and to speak up. No, you don't speak up, then the hell with you. That's exactly what we ought to be thinking.
Yeah, but...
I know I sound ruthless about it, but the time has come to draw the line.
Point, but I'm talking about the progressive right-leaning people who are the libertarians. I mean, they are speaking up about it, is what I'm saying. And
they're speaking up again about it, but from the safety zone also the implicit safety zone, that of white privilege. They're speaking from the ivory tower. They're nowhere in the middle of the fray.
Well, how
do you go to Detroit, for crying out loud, Detroit, and still ignore what is happening there? How does it happen? And you're a progressive.
Well, I don't know who you're referring to right now.
I'm going to Elizabeth Warren and the whole net nation.
Yeah.
You know, how does that happen? Why does it not occur to you that there's something wrong here?
Yeah, well, I have problems with Elizabeth Warren now.
Okay,
anyway,
we got to move on. I want to move on. But you've done a great job in getting this aspect of the conversation started.
I did Sarah's job today. I got you all worked up.
Yes, you did. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sarah, for having phone trouble. Okay, Yatrice, you have a wonderful day.
Thank you, DX. Thanks for your call. It was very, very important. Sarah, you're on the air. You're back on the air.
Yes, Yatrice. Greetings to you again, Yatrice, and I hope
you're going to have to move. Let's put it this way. You're going to have to move to another location in order to facilitate smooth phone calls.
Okay. Is this any better now?
No, I'm joking. I'm saying you have to move your house.
Oh, okay. No, I was saying that the NSA or somebody was probably playing on my phone lines today, so they wouldn't.
The NSA is on you today. What's going on in your mind today?
Okay, Yatrice, since we're back on the line, I'm going to have to totally disagree with DX and what whatever this he was saying, because to me, no disrespect to DX, but he has just wasted his time trying to make the defense for something that is indefensible. First of all, he is stated to say, that you're not prejudiced. We're all prejudiced. Let's put it on the table and let us try and let white people try and make you seem that because you are stating a fact that it has to be from a prejudicial, a bias. So everybody is prejudiced. Every single one of us is prejudiced. Because for a simple fact, your human body, if my body you treat and your body could make a prejudicial, discriminatory decision to block harmful viruses from contaminating the body and destroying it, then you already know that you are born with a prejudicial nature. And it's good and it is bad. When you use it for the good, then it's good. When you use it for bad, then it is bad. So we need to stop saying that we are not prejudiced, we are not biased, or anything of that, because we all are innately like that. Racism is a different matter, because no one black can be a racist. We don't have the control to deprive anyone of any other ethnicity, especially black people, or more importantly, white, from doing whatever it is that they want to do. So there's
I would challenge you on that premise, that no one black could be racist. The idea is that we have to understand what racism is.
Well, of course, based
okay.
on whatever...
So everybody, the fact is, everybody could be racist.
Well, it depends on what your definition is, because, so let me backtrack that, because based on what definition that you're using for racism, then you can say that, yes, everyone can be racist. But if we were to use with a generalized racism that is out here, because now it's being tweaked and it's being moved around to say that everyone can, you can, as a black person, be a tool, like President Obama, Eric Holder, and all of them can be put in a position to be a tool to be used as to promote their racist agenda. But them standing by their own without having the backing of white supremacy behind them, no, they cannot be considered to be a racist.
You're talking about race oppression. See? This is not just an attitudinal problem.
No,
you're talking
not.
About... The ability to exercise direct control and power over a person's life so as to deprive him or her
of a livelihood.
Okay. So now that this is what we're talking about. Racial attitudes, we all have them. You see?
So, of course.
I just wanted to make that distinction so we're clear. Everybody is racist, or everybody, you know, in some way or the other has racist attitudes, because that's our culture. We raised that way. Now, there are people who have the added power to activate things in your life that can put you at extreme distress and disadvantage. That is that's the racism we're talking about.
Exactly. That might be so your truth, but we're going to disagree on the racism part because, as I said before, black people standing on our own, we do not make laws to deprive you of where you have to live, to be educated.
We agree on that. That's exactly what I'm saying. The difference is in being able to wield the kind of power and influence over someone else's life that causes them great distress and puts them at great disadvantage.
Yes, ma'am. So then moving on to the next point that was made about this man selling Lucy's and he was depriving the state of their taxes. First of all, Mr. Garner, if he paid for a pack of cigarettes or a carton of cigarettes, he already paid the taxes on that cigarette.
Let's not even discuss this. This is not relevant.
But
we go back to that point. We don't have to discuss it because it is in the scheme of things. Are we really going to discuss whether a person, and this is whether a person should be selling Lucy's or not? I mean, no.
It's totally irrelevant if he did or not, because if they want to be nitpicky about it, he'd already paid the doggone taxes about it. So,
but we don't care about that. Our attitude should be, it is in our consciousness, irrelevant. It is irrelevant.
It is irrelevant, right. which is why I had to clear that point up, because to me, trying to demonize these people, you know, whenever they kill someone black in the media, they always have to go and pull out their criminal records, lay out their rap sheet, and say this is such a bad person, we need to put them in the media, excoriate them in the media, as to why it's justifiable that this person be put in a chokehold. But as
exactly.
The two cops who did this, they have a history. This man has been on the force for 7 years. Officer De Pantaleo, he's been on the force for 7 years, and every year he has had a major complaint. He has to settle a lawsuit. They had to settle a lawsuit where they violated two individuals' rights, and they had to pay out $30,000 to these $15,000 each because of what he did. So for them to sit up here and to make these guys seem like, but as you said, the Police Benevolent Association, their union, they are very good at protecting these cops when they go out here and they murder people. And Bratton, for instance, he shouldn't even have been the doggone commissioner back in New York. But that's for another, where you do your show next week, you're going to go more in detail about that. But this situation with this Gardner, and as you know, we always, you know, like DX was trying to make yourself comfortable. You can't make yourself comfortable in a cesspool. We are not here to educate anybody but ourselves. We need to be worried about educating black people, ourselves, as to whatever it is that we might need to be educated on, and stop worrying about educating white people, talking about this left-right paradigm. I get sick and tired of hearing people talk about this left-right paradigm and about whatever the heck we got to do to make ourselves more comfortable. One of the things that you might want to do to read is read Dr. Robert F. Wintersmith's book that talks specifically about the criminalization about the police force. Dr. Robert F. Wintersmith, he wrote a book called Police and the Black Community. And it traces the history of the police force going all the way back to the slave patrols, slave catchers, and all of that.
Well, you know, it's interesting you use the word patrol. The word patrol is itself a derivation of the slave days. They were called patter rollers at that time, and their job was to detect the patter of feet leaving the plantation. So, look, there is a point that you're making here which is extremely valid, and that is that we need at some point to stop this idea of always having to, well, you know, yes, he was engaged in illegal activity and he was doing this, and therefore we should
be
more accepting of the fact that it was just unfortunate that he happened to die. He just decided to happen, you know, that it was a good day for him to just die.
It's ridiculous. The man could have been urinating on the sidewalk. He could have been jaywalking. It does not matter. If it is an illegal activity for you to, a legal procedure for you to perform on this individual, then you deserve to be these two men, the one in the green shirt, because he's the one who choked him, and the other one, because after he choked him, you see him push the man's head into the pavement, knee him in the back. And, you know, It's clear evidence right in front of you what went down. I don't care what this man did. He could have beat up his wife before he came out here and got choked to death. It is totally irrelevant to what happened with this particular situation.
And that's exactly what I'm saying is that the change in mindset should be, and when people we are not discussing that. It is irrelevant here. The only thing we are interested in is what would cause or who, and all of them are implicated in this because they all had a duty to protect this man's life.
Yes, they should have stopped it. They should have stopped it.
They all had a duty to protect his life. And this was a modern day
lynching.
So they all had including the medical team that showed up and the woman who just says, okay.
Pretending she checked the man's pulse. First of all, you should have come up there with an oxygen mask to put over the man because the man said he can't breathe. First thing you show up, get an oxygen mask out, put it over him to give him some oxygen. She came up there like she barely chucked for a pulse. She already know the man was dead because the man's eyes
She was reflecting the standard attitude, the standard racial attitude in Staten Island, in that part of Staten Island, and within the confines of the situation that she was in. She was there as an extension of the police, essentially,
exactly,
and mirroring their attitudes and their actions. Yeah, it's just another, black guy, whether he's breathing or not, don't get too excited about it. The position of the community and the position of everybody, and this goes back to DX's point, you don't have to be educated about whether you should respond in a humanitarian way, whether this situation qualifies for your outrage. If you don't feel it's okay. If you don't feel outraged about it, it's okay. But the community has a responsibility to just cast you aside and move on and consider you irrelevant to its struggle. And this is the challenge to the progressive and liberal or whatever community that we use to whatever adjective we use. The job now is you have to prove yourself. You have to be on the record. You have to step forward and qualify yourself for membership in the struggle. And if you don't, it's okay. But understand that you will be cast aside as being irrelevant. You will be irrelevant. And that's the attitude people should have. We don't have any more time to engage in the education of fundamentals. But we've come to the end of our program, Sarah. I'm so glad that you were able to reconnect. You do have to move to another state or another part of the state so you can get better phone calls. This is your job now. Thank you so much. Look, we've come to the end of our program. I hope this was instructive and that you enjoyed it. But we have to get this. We have to get more of this going because this is great, great programming when we cross-pollinate like this. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Wake Up Call with Richard Martin. Drop me a note at leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. It is a pleasure and a supreme privilege to be and to share your company, to be in and share your company. Have a great weekend and see us tomorrow. Not tomorrow, Monday. See us all on Monday. Engaging in struggle once again.